I had a extreme fear of public speaking. When I was speaking to millions, I had a camera and I could look into this camera and I didn't have to see anyone's face. When I finally left the news business and I had my first keynote, I essentially bombed. That failure was how the Brain Bully was born.
Something that I found so interesting was the stats around how ineffective entrepreneurs are when it comes to communicating. How can they go from thinking they're an ineffective communicator to taking some of the steps to feel more confident and combat the brain bully?
Your greatest communication challenges have nothing to do with communication at all. Your communication's not broken. Your mind's simply trying to keep you safe. You have the keys to get yourself out of it.
Hey everyone, it's Emily Lomenzo-Washkovic, your host for Success Rewritten. Today's interview is with Lynn Smith, a former news anchor who now coaches executives, leaders, and CEOs on how to be effective communicators. She believes in this concept called the brain bully, and we all have one. She talks about how to break it down and be more effective in the aftermath. She also shares some of her personal journey and a specific phrase that a friend said to get her through. That phrase has now become the title of her popular children's book, and we dig into it all. Let's give our conversation a listen. I've interviewed Lynn before for my previous show, and it was a favorite episode of mine for 2025. So I'm very grateful that you're here for one of our launch episodes. Lynn has an amazing background in television. She was a news anchor. I'm going to let her give you the whole download, but today she actually helps high achievers with combating their brain bully. So we're going to get all into her methods, her journey, and some of her personal pivots. Lynn, to kick us off, why don't you just tell everyone your background and how you became who you are today?
Well, first, congratulations on the podcast. Emily, I'm so excited for you. This is so needed out there. So happy to join. So I, as you said, was a news anchor. I actually started as a producer at the Today Show and then pivoted to being on camera. And then after 15 years, I saw the news business changing so dramatically. And I just thought to myself, if I'm missing time with my kids, I better feel like I'm doing something purposeful. And I wasn't at the time. And I pivoted again. And in my, you know, mid-40s, started a company, became an entrepreneur, not even knowing how to work an Excel spreadsheet. That's my fun fact, that I had no idea how to run a business. But it's proof that really, truly, as long as you have that resilient mindset and you learn and continuously pivot as you gather the information of becoming a business owner, that you will eventually figure it out. And now we're 5 years in and it's figured out and we're happily training executives, speaking on stages and spreading this message.
It's more than figured out. I mean, you are the guru when it comes to people getting over this hump of communication. And that's where I want to kind of dig in next, because I think a lot of our listeners can learn from your framework. So let's take us to the point where you had this discovery about yourself when you went to get on stage. And this is a little shocking. Can you tell everyone about that?
Well, no one expects this, but I had an extreme fear of public speaking. And they're like, wait, you spoke to the public for a living? And I was like, no. When I was speaking to millions, I had a camera and I could look into this camera and I didn't have to see anyone's face. I was in the safety of a studio and I could sit in my chair, read the news, and go home. And anytime I had to public speak when I was an anchor, I always had that shaky voice. People could tell I was nervous. It was always embarrassing. But when I finally left the news business and I had my first keynote, that's when it truly was exposed. And I essentially bombed. Let's put it mildly. I bombed, guys. Your worst nightmare of speaking, this is why people fear public speaking more than death, happened to me. My mouth got so dry. It felt like I couldn't even speak. My brain left my body and I was just standing there and I was like, I'm sorry. I'm failing. Let's go to Q&A. That's the only thing I could think of. And they start asking me questions and I was humiliated and I walked out and I told the guy that was filming it, I was like, burn that tape. And I got in the car and I called my sister. And of course, we do what we do. I burst into tears and I was like, that's it. My speaking career's over. And instead, I learned the most valuable lesson of entrepreneurship, which is your failures will be what shape your successes. And that failure was how the Brain Bully was born, because I had to figure out what the heck is going on. Why do I have this shaky voice? Why do I panic? Why? And I did what any journalist would do. I investigated, I gathered research. And what was born was the Beat Your Brain Bully method, which our thoughts, that inner critic, become our decisions and actions, which lead to our outcomes. And if I'm thinking, no one wants to hear from some washed up news anchor, then my processing center of my brain is like, you're in danger. And the amygdala shoots all of that cortisol. And that's what makes your voice shake and your mouth get dry. And the beauty of it is that you change the thought, you change the outcome. And I trained myself to reframe thoughts. And I now saw the effects that it had on my speaking career. I began to crush it on stage. So I began teaching it to my executives. And that's where the big idea was unlocked, that your greatest communication challenges have nothing to do with communication at all. It has everything to do with fear. And that fear is your inner critic. It's your brain bully. Lynn, this could go wrong. Wait, what if you say the wrong thing? The stock price goes down. What if everyone hates what you have to say? You're going to sound stupid. They're going to laugh at you. All of those things are your communication troubles. So I can't even fix any of that until we get to the disease, which is your fear.
Well, and something I found so interesting when we first talked about this was the stats around how ineffective entrepreneurs are when it comes to communicating, whether that's communicating to ideal customers, communicating to their internal teams, and the brain bully is the driver there. But can you break down a little bit what those people might be thinking or feeling? Because that really is about, like, I don't know what to say to them. And how can they get through that process and go from thinking they're an ineffective communicator to taking some of the steps to feel more confident and combat the brain bully?
Well, first, let's talk about what's lost as a result of poor communication. So to your point, the study done by Grammarly and Harris Poll was 1 in 5 business deals are lost simply because you aren't effectively communicating the value of your product or your service. And so when you think about that, communication is not a soft skill. It's maybe one of the hardest skills out there, because you can have the best product, the best team, the best everything, but if you aren't communicating effectively, it essentially doesn't exist. So the first step in what we do with executives is we identify what it is that you think is holding you back. So you share with me, I talk too fast. Coaching techniques to get through that. Or I repeat myself a lot. Why do you think that is? Well, I want to make sure people understand my message. Well, what makes you think they don't understand your message? Well, I guess I don't know. And so they almost like coach themselves into the discovery that their worries and their fears are what is causing the communication issue. And then finally, I said, so what are you really afraid of happening? And it's always a version of these four, what we come to call quadrant of qualms. So it's fear of failure, self-doubt, imposter syndrome, or feelings of not enough. And it's always falling within one of those four categories. So if you are experiencing that right now, my biggest and first piece of advice is ask yourself, where does that come from? And that's why all of my executives are like, this is like corporate therapy. And I'm like, well, I don't mean it to be that way, but usually this is rooted in early experiences. Maybe you were laughed at when you did a student talk, or maybe your parent was really critical of you all the time. So now you're conditioned to look for external validation. Whatever that is, where do you think that comes from is a very simple but unbelievable unlock of truth in where you start to overcome that brain bully.
Absolutely. And I think getting specific around an example is really helpful for people too, because that can often identify the previous subconscious thing that's holding you back. Like, maybe there's someone in your organization or that you work with that you've had an experience with that's causing you to have these fears. And if you're not able to think about or break down what you're feeling and a specific example where you're being held back, it's hard to like fix it and move forward with those learnings, because you're thinking of it very broadly instead of maybe like something you've recently gone through where this has come to the surface.
And don't you think it's interesting you're pointing out other people and how they can impact your confidence?
Yes.
It's all energy, right? And we know that if people are vibrating at a lower energy, that can drag you down to that negativity. Whereas the people that you surround yourself with being the number one most indicator of success, if they're vibrating at this really intense, powerful, amazing, collaborative energy, you elevate yourself to that. So identifying who those energy sucks are, separating yourself figuratively or literally from them, and then identifying who are those people I can surround myself that increase that energy and put me more on that path that I'm looking toward is such an essential step. So you nailed it in that regard.
Well, and you need that proof point, I feel like, too, right? Whenever you're doing something new or challenging yourself, you want to see the positive outcome, and that'll make you feel more confident to do it again. It like feeds itself almost.
Yeah, exactly.
Okay, I want to talk about your children's book before we pivot too much, because for one, it's amazing and I've now given it to so many people in my life, but I also think it really connects to this brain bully concept and the idea that some of this stuff is from when we were children. So how can we build confidence in our own children in our lives and also use that knowledge to like better set ourselves up as adults for future? So tell us a little bit about the book. I want to give a little plug for it.
Thank you. Here it is. It's our little mouse that could just keep going. I will say these three words came from a really challenging time in my life when it felt like I couldn't keep going. It felt like putting one foot in front of the other just was impossible, it seemed. And I had a friend text me and she just said, just keep going. And it wasn't like, you're going to be okay. Everything's going to be fine. It was just put one foot in front of the other. Maybe it's 30 seconds. Maybe it's 3 minutes. Maybe it's today. But if you just put one foot in front of the other, you'll be all right. And when I started working with these executives and realized that their fear were their greatest communication challenges, I thought, well, for our leaders of the future, imagine when we're young, if we would be able to look at fear in a new way. And not want it to disappear, but understand that with the help of those around us, with courage, with bravery, that failure is not such a scary thing. And if we just put one foot in front of the other, we'll get to where we want to go. So the little techniques that I use with executives, like visualization, breathing, jumping up and down. We have an entire method for how to shake the nerves out when it comes to speaking and all of that. It's all in these vignettes throughout the book where Mouse meets a friend in the forest, whether that's a deer or a rabbit. And each friend gives him a new tool for his toolbox so that he can get to his destination. And so I just wanted aspiring future CEOs to have this concept of bravery at a young age. And the kids get it. I've been shocked. I sit and I do these library visits and school visits. And I say, do you know what it means to fail? And they'll answer, and spot on. And what does it mean to be brave? And they really get it. And at the end of it, they're like, I'm going to just keep going. And it's like, that's the whole reason I did this, so that the next generation of leaders can have the power of bravery in their toolbox.
It's such an enjoyable read. And I know many parents have to read the same book all the time. So if you're going to get your kid hooked on one, this is a good one. And the illustrations are so cute too. I know you partnered with someone on that, but the book is amazing. And I read every book before I like give it to, you know, friends or family. I always want to know kind of what I'm giving as a children's book. And I bought another one right away just so I always have one at my house, because I just think it's such a cute book. So I not only want to spread the word and have people check it out, but I also think it really highlights for all of us as adults and humans, this is simplistic, basic human nature type stuff that we're talking about. And these skills to move forward and push past hard times are not only important in our everyday life to keep going, but they do build more resilience over time so that you are stronger the next time you go through a bump in the road. Can you share a little bit more with us about that hard time you were going through when your friend reached out?
Yes, I haven't talked much about it, but it was the end of a long-term relationship in my life, and it was starting over. I was starting over from what had been my previous life in my 20s to this new identity that I didn't know in my 30s. And it felt really scary. And I didn't like the job. I didn't have a support system. My family wasn't nearby. So there was just a lot of not feeling like putting one foot in front of the other would be helpful. Like, I just felt stuck. And in, you know, when you feel that way, it kind of feels like you're walking through life in mud. And when people are in those experiences in life, you so often hear, oh, it's going to get better. You're going to be fine. Everything will be fine. And it's the most frustrating. Now I'm so conscious of when people are going through a challenging time. I say things like, I'm here. I just want you to know I'm here. And not what you need help with, but just sending something. Like, here's a soup. I always do a spoonful of comfort and I just ship it to people. It's so, and this is a communication expert saying this, words are so powerful, either in a good way or in a not great way. And being mindful of what can I say that will allow this person to be seen, heard, and understood? That's all we want as humans, to be seen, heard, and understood. So I see how hard this is. Just keep going. Keep going, and I'm here.
Language is so valuable, and knowing the language to support someone in your life when they're struggling is also helpful to reflect back on yourself, because sometimes we have to be the one giving ourselves the grace or the permission slip. And so I think that's really important to think about language. I want to fast forward a little bit. We've never talked about this, so if you don't want to, that's okay. But I would assume your journey into motherhood changed a lot in terms of how you showed up at work, what success looked like, how that whole relationship with your job looked like. Is there anything that you can reflect on now that it's been many years that was maybe a turning point for you and how you adapted to that period?
Such a great question, because I wish, and I think often now, 10 years, my son just turned 10, so I'm 10 years into motherhood, and I wish I could go back to day one. I would do so many things differently. When I was that new mom and I was in the hospital having no idea what I was doing and experiencing postpartum, which everyone experienced some version of postpartum, but I was so lost in what I should be doing, and everything was this, is this supposed to be happening? And every doctor's like, every kid's different and there's no answers to anything. And now I feel so much more centered as a mother, understanding so much more. And so if I could go back to that day one, or if you're listening to this podcast and you are a new mom, just show yourself grace. And I always say, like, we kind of educate ourselves into the role of mothers. We don't birth a baby and we're natural when it comes to that. We have to learn how to do that. And so when that coincided with being a working mom, to what I said in the beginning, when I realized if I'm missing time with my children for a job that wasn't fulfilling, I should really reevaluate that. And I don't take this lightly, because I know that that's even just a privileged statement to say that I could even think of. There's many people that have to stay in that job because it's essential to put food on the table. And trust me, I had to replace that paycheck. There wasn't a situation that I couldn't, you know, replace that paycheck. But I do feel that somehow the universe, that your faith, whatever it is that you look to as your source, finds the way when you are really, truly centered in that purpose. So if you're contemplating that pivot, if you're considering what else you might be able to do with your skill set, don't listen to the fear. The fear is going to be there, but listen to the purpose.
That's great advice. You had your kids before you left your career in news, right?
I did. Yes.
Okay.
4 years.
So now bring me to this, like, leaving news, becoming an entrepreneur. I'm sure it was exciting. I mean, I feel excited at points in this journey. But I'm also like, what did I do? Like every day. So tell us about that.
Hey, that doesn't go away, by the way. I always say, I'm like, do you want to become an entrepreneur? What is your threshold for stress and uncertainty? Because that's going to happen again and again and again. So I was 4 years, my son was 4 years old when I decided to leave the news business. And it was 6 years ago. My gosh, it was COVID. So 2020 hit, my show's taken off the air, and I was working from home for the first time ever. And I was reporting and just going in to fill in for the morning show whenever Robin was off. And you would have thought that I'd be devastated. Of course, when you lose your show, that's like your identity. It was the opposite. I was the happiest I've ever been, not with COVID, but with the fact that I was home with my children, that we ended up coming to the area of South Carolina by the coast that we now live in. And I was living the life that I never knew, because every job I'd ever had was weekends, overnights, mornings, in a studio. There was no concept of a work from home. And I spent a year, you know, developing the methodology, and then finally left with the ability to turn the lights on of the business, which I have that piece of advice to share with entrepreneurs. Take the time when you have a secure paycheck to develop your offerings, what you're going to be able to provide, so that you're not stumbling through the darkness in the early stages. So once I turned the lights on of the business, I essentially was like, okay, I can offer these different services. So I had different streams of income, so that if one thing didn't really work out, then something else could pay the bills. And was it terrifying? And then we had a move, so we were learning a new area. Yes, all the things. But again, when you're doing what's right, somehow it just kind of works out. You know, I've become more aligned with the idea of, you know, I say manifestation, but that's a very, it can be a woo-woo word that people either dismiss or they say, oh yeah, I'm all into that. But when I started studying it, it's so much more based in neuroscience than anything else. So it's energy. And when you align yourself with energy, that is, things are going to work out. The energy meets you there. And so I would just say, if you're in that stage of just complete uncertainty, go through the exercises of what is my purpose? What do I want? And align yourself with the right energy to get there.
Well, and not to go too far on a manifestation side conversation.
Let's do it. I'm so ready to go down that rabbit hole.
I mean, like very shortly after I was laid off, I talked to you. You were one of the first people that I was like, I need to talk to Lynn. And you gave me Matt Cook's book, Beyond Wanting. And what I really think about manifestation now is like, it's not just about thinking about what you want. It's about doing the actions to get yourself there too. But it is that mindset of thinking something's possible for you. Like, so yeah, I try to bring people down from the woo-woo perspective of it, because most people who are talking to you about manifestation or studying it are not saying, just think of something and it'll come to you. Like, that's a misunderstanding of what manifestation experts truly say.
That's right. And if you want to understand, I will plug this book all day long. Beyond Wanting by Matt Cook clearly lays out, backed in neuroscience, what manifestation truly is, which is existing as if it's already happened. Because if you are vibrating at a frequency of that energy, then the universe, the quantum field, as it's known, which is an infinite source of energy, meets you there. So things just start to work out. Now, they don't necessarily work out exactly how you align them. For example, I have my children's book. The dream is to become a New York Times bestseller. I put on my manifestation list, New York Times bestseller. That's not what manifestation is. A manifestation is, this book can get into as many hands as possible, and then you put it out there, and whatever version of that success that the universe intends it to be is what actually ends up happening. And that's what the book has done. It's now seeded in the world, and it will do what it does now with that seed. It might be a palm tree, it might be an oak, whatever it is, but it's seeded. And so reading this book helps you to understand this isn't like making up magic. It is that our mind and our energy is so very powerful, and we can use it either, because we're always manifesting, to manifest a negative outcome or a positive outcome. Truly.
Right. Okay, one more Matt Cook example.
We love the Matt. Thing that follow him on Instagram too. You'll see.
He does amazing stuff on Instagram. Lynn, I'm gonna see if you can get him to come on my show.
I will try.
Okay, so the last thing though, because this, when I read this example, I'm like, wow. And then it actually started happening for me. So Matt talks about like, if you're going to manifest, you know, you want more money, let's say, like that's something that you're, you know, working for or whatever. And you're saying, I'm open to new ways of money coming to me. You then have to be looking and open to the signs, however they come, and they might not look how you thought they would. So for example, like finding a penny or something on the subway, it's not like you're going to use that to pay your rent, but it is about looking at that as in alignment with the fact that you're open to anything. And when I lost my job, I was definitely not like frantic right away. And I think part of it was I hadn't been super happy for a while at my job. Like I hadn't been doing all the things that I originally loved about my job. But I also was like, I don't really have an ego around how I make money. So if I go back to serving tables or whatever, like it's fine, but I know I have skills. I know I can make money a lot of different ways. And then what starts popping up? Not anything paying me tons of money, but like an opportunity to work some shifts at this place I used to volunteer. And again, it's like I was looking and open to all of these different things. And that was a monetary thing, but it also brought me this other incredible value. And so I think it's about putting things out there and being open to the variety of ways that this destiny looks as you're on the journey, you know, and not just going after or wanting one thing and only accepting that as the positive outcome. Like it really is about the mindset of where you want to go and all of the things that are pushing you that direction.
And set it and forget it. And whatever version of that manifestation that will come to you is the one that was intended to be that way. And I've learned this so many times in my career when I didn't even do this kind of energy work, where the way that it actually worked out was way, way better than the version that I wanted to work out. And it's this trust that there is no already scripted future for you. There's not like, hey, can you read a crystal ball? Does it all work out? It's the choices that we make every single day determine what that future looks like, which should be incredibly motivating because that tells us we are in complete control of our outcomes. So again, to the brain bully, our thoughts, which live in our reticular activating system, move to the front of our brain where the amygdala and the prefrontal cortex are, and they process that as data. And it doesn't know that that data is made up. And the best part is, if you're going to make something up, why don't you make something up that's useful? And that's going to lead to the outcome. So if I'm thinking, nothing ever seems to work out for me, the processing of that data and the energy that that emits is the universe saying, oh, okay, yeah, nothing's going to work out. Okay, yeah, I'm here for that. Yeah, okay. If you change and reframe that thought to everything always works out for me, it just always happens. Then the processing of that data is like, you're good. And the energy is everything's always coming in. And I can't tell you, it's magic. And I've talked to Matt about this. I'm like, Matt, you will not believe what just popped into my inbox because the morning meditation I did, and it's like, it's magic. That's but it's rooted in neuroscience. And so that should be the ultimate motivator to anyone listening right now. You're in complete control.
Okay. I want to talk a little bit about like some of your tactics, whether they're personal or things that you teach or coach. Like when someone is first becoming aware of the brain bully, right? Like maybe they're just the kind of person that's always been going full speed ahead their whole life and they never like analyze themselves or like wondered the deeper like going ons behind why they do or feel certain ways. How do you have them try to like identify the root of that? Is there something you have them do or like a project you have them work through to get more insights about themselves?
It's very rooted in self-discovery. So I think the best coaches don't tell, they uncover. So I don't show up on camera when I'm doing these sessions and I'm like, here's what you should do and here's what you shouldn't do and here's what you're doing wrong and here's what's right. It's more a very intentional series of questions that I ask executives that typically have never gone through anything like this, which is why they call it corporate therapy. And they usually, what happens is I work with enterprise companies. So the comms team hires me and I'm typically working with the CEO and the CEO says, my teams need this. And so they show up having no idea what's about to unfold because they're just like, I'm just told I'm doing communications training. And all of a sudden they're talking about how their critical parent was, you know, constantly on their shoulder their entire life. And now they carry that into the boardroom, right? And it's through these intentional series of questions that are rooted in uncovering the root cause of why they aren't showing up with that executive presence that is commanding and confident. After that, we can teach the tactical stuff. Here's how you talk in sound bites. Here's how to properly prepare. So many executives either over-prepare or under-prepare. And we have the Goldilocks effect. Like, this is exactly how you can create the routine. And after that, it's crafting their brand story so that they fully step into their uniqueness and they share that across all platforms and teach them the proper structure of a presentation that will captivate attention and keep it. And then finally, how to have these in difficult situations, crisis, challenging relationships, difficult coworkers. And then we put it to practice in real time. And we do what I like to call mock interviews, right? So if they're preparing for a big town hall, then we go through the process of me interviewing them, all of that. And it's really a quick process. So in 30 days, we see, and I just had somebody on my team ask me this, have you ever not seen the transformation? And I said, I haven't. I'm 5 years in and I haven't yet not seen a transformation. Now, the exception would be if I ever coached a narcissist or a sociopath because their brains are wired differently. And they will not, this work will not resonate with them. But luckily, knock on wood, I have not had that come across my desk yet. Because I think they're not the type of person that would raise their hand and say, I actually think I need to do this.
100%. And what I love the most about how you work people through the system is they think it's like a skill that they don't have, but really it's like so much deeper. And I think that's a good takeaway for any entrepreneur. It's like, yeah, you're very busy and you might feel like everything that happens to you or that you do or whatever is driven by how busy you are. But everyone could take a chance to ask themselves a couple of questions about what they're thinking, how they're feeling, and if everything is in alignment or if maybe they need to adjust something. And I think sometimes entrepreneurs, they're afraid to prioritize themselves because they think it might cause the business to slow or deprioritize or something of that nature. Can you maybe speak to how you've seen the opposite, whether it's like a leader taking better care of themselves and the mindfulness of how they show up, or even in your own journey, like, is there a period where you feel like, yeah, I had to change how I was doing things and I thought maybe it would pull me back, but really I saw over time, it was like, yeah, that was the right move. I should have done that and prioritized myself sooner.
Well, I kind of describe it as like, you've been in mind jail your entire career. You don't know why you say all the time. You don't know why you're repeating yourself or going on and on and on and never landing the plane. And because it feels awkward to raise your hand and say, I'm not a good communicator. Can I get help with this? You then are unintentionally sending messages to your audience, whether that's your boss or potential clients, that this person doesn't have a commanding presence. And in this age of AI, when everything can be automated, we know our currency is going to be our presence. It's going to be our energy. It's going to be what we say that will move the needle versus what they can read that ChatGPT put together. And now I just wrote an article about this because I was so frustrated. I emailed who I really respected as a thought leader. He had one of those newsletters reply back if this resonates with you and we can talk about how it looks to work together. So I replied back and I was like, hey, I really respect you. I'm maybe interested in joining your cohort. I'd love to see what that looks like. And then it was the reply back that was so AI chatbot. And it was like, I hear you, Lynn. Sounds like you could use this. Tell me a little bit more about what would help scale your business. And then I just started playing with it because I was like, oh, I want to see how far I'll take that. So I replied again, got another ChatGPT response, replied again. And then finally I responded back and I was like, I'm really disappointed. I really respect you. And I don't mind people using AI, but when they pretend that they're not, that loses the know, like, and trust factor. So you went from potentially me spending five figures with you to bye, unfollow, not on my watch. And listen, I use AI in all the things, but I'm transparent about it. I'm even building an AI version of myself as a coach, but people will know that's the AI version of me. I don't pretend to be corresponding with somebody. And I think because of that simple interaction, we are learning AI cannot replace your most valuable asset. So if you're not investing in this today, then you will become just as extinct as if you stop using AI altogether.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Okay. I don't know that you've necessarily had a point in your entrepreneurial journey where you're like, this is going under, like, the, you know, it's like really bad. But what about just like as a human days when,
yeah.
Oh, okay. Go.
Oh yeah. I mean,
Lynn's like, wait, I've been there.
I've so been there. One, two, I've also had days where I'm like, I'm going to burn the business to the ground. I'm going to go work as a newborn, like, baby rocker. All I want to do is sit and, like, rock babies. That's all I want to do. Or, like, take my golden retriever and become a therapy dog, you know, coordinator. Yes, I've thought about that so many times. But the real lowest point was I had a failed business partnership that I really trusted somebody and entered into essentially a startup and learned how smoke and mirrors truly work in the startup world, how integrity is essential, if not the non-negotiable for me in business, and allowed my business to essentially go to zero while I worked on building this over here. And when I realized what was happening, I had to restart what I had built. So I had launched a six-figure business that I let go to zero, and then I had to work on rebuilding it. And what I found was the lessons that I learned in that failure enabled me to go from six to seven figures, no doubt. When I rebuilt it from a completely different place with scars, wounds, open, bleeding, tourniquet needed, that was the launch pad to my growth. And so if you are experiencing that right now, if you're in that season, or you're not doing something because you're afraid of what that failure is, let my failed keynote and my failed business venture be that reminder that these are the stepping stones to your successes, and keep going.
Well, in the relationship things, I mean, I can't tell you the number of entrepreneurs, they have a partner, they break with their partner, you know, all these things that happen that are based on human interaction and relationships, which can be so challenging. What do you do when you're in that really hard time? Like, how do you disconnect and fill your own cup when you're not feeling very positive or very good?
Right. And to your point, it's sad because a lot of business relationships fall apart, and it a lot of times has to do with money and people sacrificing their integrity for that dollar sign. And the most important thing in my mind is to separate, divorce, cut it off. There is no in-between to me. And that's a toxic trait I have. I'm half Italian. And it's like when you lose my trust, I'll forgive, but you can't get back in. There's not an in-between. I make a clean break and that almost falls off my radar and doesn't exist any longer. And I don't say that's the right way. It's just the way I happen to be wired in my mind. I can't play the fake game.
Which I think is totally fair. And I think a lot of people stay in bad partnerships for a long time because they're afraid of what the separation might look like. And you're the second person I've interviewed this week who, in hindsight, has been able to say, it was so much better that I'm no longer partnered with them. And I think the longer you draw it out for the wrong reasons, the harder it is to separate all those inner workings, you know?
Yeah. And I think another part of success, not the bad failed relationships, but the successful relationships, are rooted in very clear communication. And I'll give you an example. So my best friend of 25 years, we were college roommates. She is a wildly successful entrepreneur, built, scaled, sold her digital marketing company, and now implements EOS in a lot of businesses. And so I began talking to her, being like, can you come on as a strategist? And we had a really important conversation that many people don't have when talking about, just like when you get married, you talk about religion, money, all the things. Well, we should be doing that in our business marriages too. And we had a conversation of like, we will keep these communication lines so wide open. If one of us feels disappointed in a situation, we're going to talk about it. I've asked her multiple times, like, will you please come on and do this full time? And she's like, I can't give you the time that you need and you'd be frustrated with me. And I thought, like, how emotionally intelligent is that? That I'm literally like, take my money, come on and do this. And she's like, I don't have the bandwidth to give you what it is that you're looking for and you'll be frustrated, but here's what I can do. And so that marriage has been so successful because of those open lines of communication.
Yes, I think that's so key. And if you're wondering or thinking about it, ask, because there's so many times where we're processing everything internally and there's someone right there that we could be talking to and getting the real information. We don't have to assume or fill in gaps. It's really good to sometimes just hash it out and talk about it.
Exactly.
Okay, Lynn, you're always dropping gold for me. I feel like as we're kind of wrapping here, I want to know if there's any daily, weekly, monthly practices or things you do to kind of stay grounded. Are there any like boundaries that you're just, this is how you operate, you're never going to go over them or past them? How do you protect your peace, your time, all of that while you're still achieving so much?
I wish that I could say that I do it well. I don't do it well. I think I don't have it all. I have it the best I can. When things are going great at work, I've got my 7-year-old crying in my arms being like, mommy, please don't go on this work trip. And I'm like, but baby, it helps people. What mommy's teaching, it helps me. He's like, but it doesn't help me. And I'm like, oh. So there's just no right answer to that other than a few things I have done to try and be the best I can be, which is I have yes buckets. Like this is the yes, I have to. So I have to be there and be present with the kids because I want to. And then I have the no bucket. Like I can't be the PTO president. I can't even be the room mom. I want to, that'd be great. But it's just, I'm the Venmo mom and I will Venmo you all day long. Class basket, Venmo, all the things. And then I have the wants bucket. Like I want to be a good friend. I want to be able to go to a girl's dinner, but I'm not always going to be able to say yes. And that's okay. And I'm honest about it. And if I pick the right friends, they understand and they're giving me grace because I'm not always there at book club. I'm rarely there. And I'm not always able to go. Like I'll get text messages from friends that is like, hey, you want to go play tennis? And I'm like, it's 11 on a Tuesday. No, I can't. I'm in back-to-back calls. So if I could project anything, especially to working parents, is how are you setting up those buckets of yes, this has to get done. No, this can't get done. And maybe I'll be able to get this done.
That's a perfect way to process it. And even to figure out how to spend your day in any given day, how to spend your time, I should say. Any final advice you want to give people? I'm thinking now mostly about like the entrepreneurs that are maybe in that hustle stage that you were in when you were thinking about starting your own thing. Like, how do we get people to feel confident, excited, give what their ideas are, the time that they deserve? Like, how do we get them to want to do this entrepreneur thing, even though it's hard?
It's hard, but the outcome is freedom, right? So I don't have to show up for my daily 9 a.m. meeting or else the paycheck won't come across, right? I don't have to deal with annoying Bob in accounting. And it's, you know, something that's just a byproduct of the job. You have complete freedom over your schedule, your calendar. If I wanted to blow up the business tomorrow and start from scratch, you can because you are in complete control of that. And I had this conversation with you as sort of a final thought for everyone when you were looking to begin this business is take that core idea. What's that big idea that you do differently than people out there, right? For me, you don't have a communication problem. You have a fear problem. That's the nucleus of what I teach. And then outside of that, build your ecosystem of frameworks. So we have the Beat Your Brain Bully method. We've got the four-part story framework. We've got the construct of a soundbite. All of that becomes your IP. And then decide what do you want to create with that IP? Is it the online course? And then there's the one-on-one, and then there's the speaking version of it, but it's all rooted in that nucleus big idea. And then you're just transforming how you deliver it and those frameworks in the ecosystem. And the final piece of it is allow yourself to not have it figured out. Take it from the former news anchor that read Glass for 15 years and didn't know how to do an Excel worksheet to running a business that I have no idea how it happened, but you know, we run a seven-figure business. And I would have never imagined, I didn't have a single skill set to be able to do that. But what I did have was that resilient mindset that I'm gonna figure it out and I'm gonna fall on my face and I'm gonna then pick myself back up and keep going. And if you bring that to the table and you protect your own energy and you vibrate at that frequency, it will find you. I call me and prove me wrong. DM me and be like, no, Lynn's full of it. It didn't work out that way. And I'll say, wait a second, that success is on the other side of the failure you just experienced.
I think that's a great place for us to close out, but let's tell everyone, where can they find you? Where can they see your work? Where can they stay up with some of your tips and tricks? Give us all the good places they should go.
Well, my website is lynnsmith.com and you can sign up for my newsletter right there on the website. And then on Instagram, I'm at lynnsmithtv, also on LinkedIn at lynnsmithtv. And we weekly, daily send out as many messages as we can that is just to remind you that your communication's not broken. Your mind's simply trying to keep you safe and you no longer have to be locked in that mind jail, that you have the keys to get yourself out of it. And then on the other side of that jail is utopia. It's freedom. It's everything that you hope and dream for. So that's not sugarcoating it. I've seen it time and time again. In fact, I haven't been proven wrong yet. So don't be the one that does it.
It won't be me, Lynn. It definitely won't be me that does it. Thank you so, so much. I cannot honestly thank you enough for your time, the energy that you bring to all of your interviews. I know it's going to help so many people.
Thank you. Congratulations on this podcast. Keep doing amazing things. And of course, keep going.
Thank you, Lynn. Thanks so much for tuning into this episode. Be sure to like, subscribe, and share it with someone that you know. That's the best way to help us grow and get more visibility on Success Rewritten. If you want to connect with me, you can comment below or reach out to me directly, emily@successrewrittenshow.com. And if you want to learn more about Lynn's work, head to lynnsmith.com or follow her on social media at lynnsmithtv. Lynn does amazing content on LinkedIn as well, so be sure to find and follow her there. If you have any questions for us or things you think we should cover on future episodes, comment below or get in touch directly. We want to hear from you, and we want to know what interests you most for future episodes. See you next time.